Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and happy Groundhog's Day today, Ted, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, I heard that Punxsutawney Phil did not see a shadow, so an early spring.
Okay.
It's good news on a day like this.
In Punxsutawney. Anyway,
yes,
I guess we'll go with that. So, Groundhog's Day, of course, the movie we think about just kind of doing things over and over again, and maybe in your marriage you feel like it's kind of the same thing over and over again. We're going to talk about how to build love. And I don't know, Ted, you got plans for Valentine's Day? You've been working on that for the last
My wife's
couple
taking
weeks?
The girls on a retreat, actually. So very romantic. But just happened to fall on that time.
Sure.
I'm actually going to go and play music at my mother-in-law's church on Valentine's Day.
So,
speaking of God's love that day.
All right. So are you off the hook then?
Something else. I mean, we'll do something else, you know, just have another date night. Try to do that anyway, right? Just maintain that.
Okay. We're going to talk today about love busters and about finding your mate's most important emotional needs and meeting them, and just some ways to encourage you in this month of Valentine's that, you know, love doesn't just have to center on one day, and it doesn't have to be about flowers and candy. Mm-hmm. So happy to have back with us good friends, Dr. Bill Harley and his wife Joyce are in the studio. Willard Harley Jr. is a nationally acclaimed clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, and best-selling author of a number of books, including Five Steps to Romantic Love, Love Busters, His Needs, Her Needs, He Wins, She Wins, Practicing the Art of Marital Negotiation. That was one of the most recent ones. And Bill and Joyce do a daily radio call-in show called Marriage Builders. You can find out more about their great work online, marriagebuilders.com. And we've enjoyed conversations with Bill and Joyce over the years, have friendship going way back. So looking forward to the hour ahead today. And just want to say right away, we're going to talk marriage and relationships today. And you have a question or a comment, and maybe some of our conversation will spark something there, and you'd like to get more specific answers, feel free to give us a call. We'll also give away a couple copies of Bill's books, Love Busters and His Needs, Her Needs. So we'll do that at the end of the hour. So if you'd like to at least sign up for that, because I know that'll be a great resource for you or someone that you know and care about, 877-933-2484 is the phone number, 877-93-FAITH. Bill and Joyce, good to see you.
Good seeing you again.
Oh, it was February, and we thought, I wonder if Neil is going to call.
Sure. Well,
yes.
Sure.
So you didn't disappoint us, Neil.
I know, good. Well, yes, because we don't want to talk about marriage relationships too much. You know, just once a year, that'll do it. So actually, that is probably one of the challenges, isn't it, where some of us Scandinavian types say, well, you know, we don't always express love so much, right? That's maybe one of the issues with some of us that need to learn how to be more expressive, probably.
Well, it's usually a man's problem, actually. Joyce is the only Scandinavian in our marriage.
Okay.
I'm German.
Okay.
The Germans are also somewhat restrict their expressions. But Joyce and I have managed to overcome our cultural backgrounds.
Well, my father always said, being Swedish, he said, us Swedes were lovers, not fighters.
Yeah, okay. Right. That was a good tradition to create in his family there.
Yeah. So we don't hold anything back, that's for sure.
That's good. Well, we're going to talk about, Valentine's Day, of course, lots of attention, flowers, candy, all those things, and romance is sort of the buzzword. So I'm thinking maybe to start, how do we define romance, and is it reasonable to expect it year in, year out?
Yeah, romantic relationship is one where two people are in love, point number one, and are meeting each other's most important intimate emotional needs. So the two have to be working together. So it's a very fragile thing. So a romantic relationship is something that when you have it, it's absolutely wonderful, and you want it to go on forever. And when you don't have it, it's usually very disappointing, and it usually creates a craving for that kind of an experience. Most of us get married in a romantic relationship. So at the time we say I do, we have this romantic relationship. We are in love. We are meeting each other's emotional needs. But after marriage, the things that can come up, like children, for example, where you become so concerned about these other issues, earning a living, in engaging in your various responsibilities of life that start to pop up. You got a house, you got yard work, you have all these things. And so the time that you would have spent meeting each other's intimate emotional needs, which really takes quite a bit of time. I usually argue that it's at least 15 hours a week. And people just say, well, I just don't have that kind of time. You had it when you were dating, and you had it during the first few years of your marriage. But with these responsibilities, you lose the recognition that you need to have this in order to keep your marriage fresh and alive. And so what most couples experience is after 3 or 4 years of marriage, especially after children arrive, they lose this feeling of romantic love. And in my experience as a marriage counselor, during the first few years, back in the 60s, I discovered that if people said that they had lost the feeling of love, right away they were thinking about taking the exit and getting out of their marriage. And I'm dealing with Christians. I'm dealing with pastors. I'm dealing with missionaries. And they're talking about getting out of their marriage because they lost the feeling of love. For as a Christian, I felt that this was astonishing. How can you do this? How can you give up something that you know is God's will to develop? And they say, yeah, but being in love is just too important to me. So instead of hammering them over the head, what I did instead was I took on the whole question of what does it take to stay in love? How does a person actually develop a relationship where you can be in love for the rest of your life? And so from a scientific standpoint, I created a program that would achieve that objective. Now, this is something Joyce and I had for 10 years by this time. And when people were telling me you can't be in love for more than 3 or 4 years, I knew right away that was wrong because Joyce and I were still in love with each other. We had a romantic relationship, and it had been 10 years. And what were we doing? What were we doing that other people needed to learn to do so that they could have – so they could be in love? Well, now we've been married 53 years, and we've been in love for 53 years. There's never been a break in that 53-year time. And people think, well, you know, you're not telling us the truth, Dr. Harley. There had to have been sickness or something in the me. But what is true about our marriage is that we have had a romantic relationship for 53 years.
And he brought me along to attest to that fact. Sure. That he is really telling the truth here.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, Neil, how there are authorities out there that write books on the fact that, you know, enjoy your romantic relationship and your romantic love in your marriage for about 5 years. So really cherish it, because then you're going to go to another stage. And they have names for these different stages in your marriage. And we look at that and we get very sad. We get very sad because that spark can be with you your entire married life. What happens, though, when you do get married, you seem to feel like, well, I got who I was looking for. Now they're in place. The ring's on the finger. The name is there. And now we're going to get on with life, forgetting that the relationship needs to be maintained as well to keep that romance alive.
I like the way, Bill, you've, as you talked about, sort of, you know, scientifically just evaluating how do we keep romantic love? And you kind of put it in, I guess, almost sort of a banking equation, deposits and withdrawals. But just, you know, if people haven't heard about that, just kind of review what that means.
Well, first of all, my background is in behavioral psychology, and so I'd studied how people develop associations with certain emotional reactions to things. And so I used that background to help me understand what it would take to create the feeling of love from a behavioral standpoint and a conditioning standpoint. So I didn't want to use those words because that would turn people off. So I developed a concept called the love bank, where I said that it starts with the idea that everything you do in marriage affects each other emotionally, everything you do. And you're either making love bank deposits or you're making love bank withdrawals in what you do with each other. And when you're meeting each other's emotional needs, you are making massive love bank deposits. And when you make enough deposits and the account, your spouse's account in your love bank reaches a certain point, you breach what I call the romantic love threshold, where suddenly you feel in love. Now, that's a feeling I've had for Joyce all these years. It's because she keeps making all these massive deposits. It keeps me keeps her account above this romantic love threshold. She's probably way above it, actually. She can afford to lose a few, and I'm still there. You know? But the basic idea is that is the way people can kind of understand it. They understand the process. Yeah, when I'm doing things that upset my spouse, I'm making love bank withdrawals. And when I do things with something like my spouse just or her eyes just light up, I'm making love bank deposits. And if I make more withdrawals and deposits, we're going to lose this feeling that we had toward each other. So I got to avoid making the withdrawals, and I've got to learn to be consistent in making the deposits, and that way we can stay in love. Now, from a Christian standpoint, I've always argued that making deposits and avoiding withdrawals is a litmus test of the care that we're showing each other. I mean, I could also use the example of 1 Corinthians 13 and say, look, Paul wants us to be patient and kind. He wants us to avoid getting angry. He wants us to avoid being selfish. I mean, all the things that he's talking about are things that build love bank deposits and avoid love bank withdrawals. And so I could put it in spiritual terms, too. I could say that this is God's will for our lives, to make love bank deposits and avoid making love bank withdrawals.
And what's interesting in 1 Corinthians 13 is that there are two what you should be doing to maintain love, but there are eight knots.
And this is one of the biggest problems that you have in marriage, and that is there are lots and lots of ways to make love bank withdrawals.
Yeah, it's like God knew that our human nature is such that if we went down the human nature road, we would definitely be destroying the love that God had given us with our husband and wife.
So my care for Joyce is not just simply meeting her emotional needs or she meeting mine. We also have to be careful that we're not doing things that are selfish, where we benefit at the expense of our spouse and end up hurting our spouse in the process.
Let's take a quick break and come back and talk more. We'll unpack some of Bill and Joyce's reflections from his book, Love Busters, which is talking about protecting your marriage from the habits that destroy romantic love. We got a copy of Love Busters, as well as His Needs, Her Needs, Building an Affair-Proof Marriage. We'll do a drawing here at the end of the hour for you if you'd like to sign up for that. And I'd love to have you join the conversation, too. You can call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Dr. Bill Harley is a best-selling author and a clinical psychologist, marriage counselor. Bill and Joyce have their own daily radio call-in show called Marriage Builders. You can find out more about that at marriagebuilders.com. We'll continue in just a minute. Past the hour, doing a little marriage refresher today with Dr. Bill Harley and Joyce. Bill and Joyce do a daily radio call-in show called Marriage Builders. They write regularly on the website marriagebuilders.com. Bill is a nationally acclaimed clinical psychologist and marriage counselor and best-selling author. Several books that he's written, including His Needs, Her Needs. We have a copy of that to give away, as well as Love Busters. Those are just a couple of the books. I encourage you to go to marriagebuilders.com to find out more about the resources. And we're talking today about the ways that we can build romantic love. And Bill and Joyce were just talking a little bit about, before the break, about 1 Corinthians 13, a wonderful setting for applying what does God's Word have to say about what we should be doing when we want to love one another. Let's talk a few about some of those, maybe those knots and the love busters that, is there a list of what most typically this is the number one love buster?
Well, basically, verses 4 and 5 of 1 Corinthians 13 kind of has it in a nutshell, where it talks about the two positives and seven or eight negatives. And what's interesting about understanding love is that there's probably more to think about when you consider negatives than there are positives. And I think Paul had it right here when he said you have to be patient and kind. I think if you have those two things going for you in your marriage, you have covered a lot of ground in terms of what you should be doing. But then he goes into all the negatives here, and he talks about being envious and not rude and not self-seeking and not easily angered. And then he has an interesting one. It keeps no record of wrongs. I call that dwelling on mistakes of the past, which is something that should be avoided in marriage. The basic idea is that sometimes when you are trying to think about the love bank, the negatives turn out to be more important than the positives. Avoiding the negatives, avoiding thinking about what do you do in your marriage that really upsets each other, and what can you do to avoid doing any of these things. So when I'm dealing with a new couple, they've just come to me and they say, you know, we got problems in our marriage. I have them complete what I call the Love Busters inventory. Busters questionnaire, which, by the way, can be downloaded free of charge on our website. Go to the questionnaire section. You can download it, and you can fill out those forms for just in your own home. And then we have them fill out the emotional needs questionnaire. But I usually start with the Love Busters. I usually start there. I usually say let's plug up the leaks in the love bank before we start worrying about how we're going to make deposits. Because if you can make a lot of deposits, but if they're all draining out right away, you're in a sense, you're kind of wasting your time.
I think it needs to be said, too, if you do fill out this questionnaire, you both fill it out. And then do you prioritize it, Bill, and you take one or two that you're going to be working on?
Yeah, we have another questionnaire we call the marital analysis inventory, where you prioritize. Now that we know what our love busters are and we know what emotional needs we're not meeting for each other, now what are the highest priorities? Where do we begin? How do we start? So these three questionnaires are something that everybody can fill out on their own, and they can say, okay, here's where we need to put some time and attention on. And the basic approach that I take about solving marital problems is that you stop the withdrawals and you start making the deposits, and it's just that simple. And a lot of people, what they'll say is that, yeah, but it doesn't feel right. It feels uncomfortable to be doing the things that meet emotional needs, and I just feel so intensely that I need to say certain things that I know my spouse considers disrespectful, but just it's something I just have to say and I have to do. And when I'm angry, I have to express my anger. Well, all of these things, of course, ruin a romantic relationship. I mean, if you say you have to do these things, then what it means is that you're not going to be experiencing a romantic relationship in your lifetime. Joyce and I don't do this with each other. We don't have arguments. Joyce and I do not have arguments. Do we have conflicts? Every hour we're together.
Amen. Yes.
Hour we're together. We don't see the world the same way. We have different eyes. We see things differently. And it is our different perspectives that help each of us become wiser in life. But if we were disrespectful, if Joyce says, well, this is the way I see it, and I say, yeah, but I don't see it that way at all. I mean, my perspective. Then it's kind of like we're standing back to back. And Joyce sees the ocean, and I see the mountains. And the question is, who's right? Who's right? We're both right. Both of our perspectives need to be considered in the solutions to problems. So we have a relationship of utmost respect. We do not say disrespectful things to each other. So people that say, yeah, but then you're not being honest. And I would say, It is true that sometimes I think disrespectful thoughts and Joyce thinks disrespectful thoughts. But we don't say those things because we know that they are offensive and they would make Love Bank withdrawal.
And it's interesting how we would treat friends. You know, the things that we say to our spouse, we would never consider saying to our best friends because we consider that friendship very special and we don't want to erode it in any way. And yet we are so can be so caustic to our husband or wife. It's sad. We hear this every day. The disrespectful and unkind and rude things, the things that develop from anger, often leading to abuse, emotional and physical. It just makes us grieve what husbands and wives are doing to each other. And it's out of love busters, but love busters are a habit. It's a bad habit. And the point we want to make to our listeners is that you can change. You can develop new habits that will build your marriage and your love, not destroy it.
Which made me wonder, so do you, the old saying, do you fake it till you make it? I mean, because it takes a while to establish a new habit, and it doesn't feel natural, as
good
you said.
Point.
That's right. And there's an argument that could be made that learning to be an affectionate person may require you to do affectionate things for a while. And practice those things, practice being affectionate, and you say, but this is just isn't me. I just don't do affectionate things. I was raised in a Swedish family where we don't touch each other.
And, no, they're lovers, remember?
and I would say then what you need to do is get into the habit of doing it. You need to practice it. And it's kind of like typing. When you first learned to type, that sounded – it felt just not you. You know, just I can't do this kind of thing. And yet, if you practiced it long enough, it gets to be so automatic that you don't look at the keyboard at all. You're just looking at or you're even thinking about what you want to type and they show up on the screen. And I think that habits that meet emotional needs are just as automatic. The question is, do you want to get into the habit of making massive love bank deposits? Or would you like to stay in the position you're in right now where your spouse is needing these things from you and have told you I won't get them from anybody else because that would be too tempting. It would create a situation where I now have a romantic relationship with somebody outside of marriage. You're my only hope. And so the basic idea is that we as Christians are required by our love for the Lord and to care for other people. And what person needs our care more than anybody else than is our spouse?
Getting wise advice from counselor, clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, best-selling author, Dr. Bill Harley. Bill and Joyce are in studio today. We talk a little bit about their insights. We give you some free counsel today, too. Maybe you have a question about your marriage relationship or someone in your family that you care about and would like to ask a question. You can always be anonymous if you prefer that as well. You can call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we've got a couple of copies of Bill's book to give away, His Needs, Her Needs, and Love Busters. We'll give those away here at the top of the hour. So call and register for that by going online at or on the phone at 877-933-2484. More with Dr. Bill and Joyce Harley coming up in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Past the hour, it's Connecting Faith. We've connected with Dr. Bill and Joyce Harley today. Bill's a clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, best-selling author, and I recommend his books. Bill and Joyce have also done a devotional together, right? Calls it Daily?
Draw Close.
Draw Close, right. Something that you can find out more about. His books on their website, marriagebuilders.com. They host a daily radio program as well, and we're inviting you to join us. If you have a question today, want some counsel, some advice on building romantic love in your marriage, you can join us at 877-93-FAITH. Or if it's more convenient to drop us a note, you can do that via email. If you go to myfaithradio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there, and you can send us your information. If you prefer to remain anonymous, you can do that as well. What we're talking about today is our spouse's most important and our most important emotional needs. I know, Bill, we mentioned just at the kind of the outset that it takes a long time to invest in a marriage. And I think sometimes maybe as Christians we say, well, does marriage need to be a number one priority, or is it just it's important, but, you know, my relationship with God is first, and my if I'm in ministry, then, you know, my work in ministry, that's, you know, marriage kind of falls in line after that. Someplace.
Yeah, I would say that my marriage is a form of worship, that I view my marriage as God's will for my life.
And yeah, make it clear that you're not worshiping me.
No, not
is right. Okay.
Well, I do kind of worship.
Well, no. It's a worship form of worship for God, what you do for me. Yes.
But the basic idea is that as a believer in Jesus Christ, and he says that we will be known by our love. That how will people know that we are his disciples? They will know us by our love. And I view marriage as the ultimate experience that I can have to demonstrate my love for others. And God has given me Joyce as the number one person to love. So there's no competition between loving God and loving Joyce. Basically, in loving Joyce and caring for her, I am caring for God himself. Now, the interesting thing, Jesus says that to the extent that you've done this to the least of these my brethren, you've done it unto me. And I think that's very, very true. I mean, to the extent that I care for everybody, that I am caring for Christ. But I think that this is especially true in my marriage, that Joyce has risen to the level of the most important person for me to care for. And also, to the extent that I demonstrate my care for her in an extraordinary way, I talk about extraordinary care as what marriages are really all about, that we are to care for each other as we would care for Christ himself. To that extent, I practice the kind of care that God wants me to show other people. So I'm caring for Joyce in an unusual way, but to a great extent, I care for other people in the same way. I don't want to hurt other people. I want to avoid love busters in my relationship with other people. I want to meet other people's emotional needs, not their intimate emotional needs. That's reserved for Joyce. But I want to meet other emotional needs. I want to meet their physical needs. I want to help people as best I can. That's what it means to be a Christian. That's what it means to live the life that Christ has for us. What is it to be a follower of Christ? What does it mean to be a follower of Christ? It means to understand the importance of love, importance of caring for others, and it's demonstrated most in marriage.
You know, before I want to talk about a few some of the most important emotional needs, but I'm thinking, you know, we've sort of touched on love busters. I don't know if you can summarize in a few minutes, say, well, here's at least what you talk about in the book. Here are sort of the primary love busters. We sort of touched on, I think, with disrespectful comments and things, but mm-hmm. Is there kind of a checklist?
There are six of them.
Okay. Let's
six
review
of them.
Those.
And the first three have to do with abuse and control. And abuse and control are a big deal in marriage. I mean, to the extent that I try to control Joyce, and when I talk about being in control, I'm talking also about being abusive, that the two go hand in hand. And if I make demands on Joyce, if I make demands on her, what I'm being is selfish. And that's why I call them selfish demands. So there's no misunderstanding. A demand is selfish. Telling her that she has no right to refuse. Telling her that she must do my bidding. That she must follow my instructions. To me, that's a love buster. She isn't going to appreciate it. I'm not going to get the job done either, quite frankly. And what I need to do instead is to make what I call thoughtful requests. I need to make a request to her saying that I don't feel entitled to get what I need from you. Joyce, I would appeal to your love for me or care for me. Would you help me with this? Would you do this for me? And I want to make sure that in the way you do it, you're happy with doing this for me. So I would say, how do you feel about doing this for me? That's a thoughtful request. So I turn a demand, which is very, very negative, into a positive, thoughtful request. The next category is disrespectful judgments. So instead of calling Joyce names, instead of telling her that she's a bad person because she's not doing what I want her to do, instead of judging her, what I have is respectful persuasion. So I look at her and I say, you know, I'd like to change your mind about certain things. There are certain things that are coming between us, and I would like to convince you that there's another way of looking at things. I have to do that in a very thoughtful way. The third is angry outbursts. Instead of telling Joyce that you have to do this for me, and then she says, no, I'm not going to do it. And so I say disrespectful things to her in an effort to get her to do things for me. Then I lose my temper. And I say, you know, you have really upset me because you're not doing what I tell you to do. And I have an angry outburst. Those three things together, demands, disrespect, and anger, is what a fight is all about. That when a couple has a fight, if they've ever had a fight, that's what they're doing. And all three of them are love busters. They ruin romantic love, and they not only ruin romantic love, they don't get the job done. They don't accomplish anything. They don't get what you need. Then there's dishonesty. That's the fourth love buster. There is independent behavior, which means I'm going to go ahead and do what I please, no matter how Joyce feels about it. And then finally, there is annoying habits, of which all men have to be on their toes because their wife is sure to come up with a few examples.
Annoying habits, yes, exactly. Yes.
I wish you wouldn't have looked at me quite so intently on that last one. But so, an excellent summary, and really, if we could, as you said, if we could plug the holes in those, that would go a long way toward the changing relationship.
And they're all habits. They're all habits. They're all things you get into a routine of doing it where you don't even think you're doing it, and here it is, and it's making love bank withdrawals every time you do it. And instead of being in the habit of making withdrawals, you need to get in the habit of making deposits. And not only that, but getting rid of these bad habits helps you get what you need. I mean, if you really feel that you're not getting what you need in your marriage, chances are you are engaged in love busters. You're going about it the wrong way.
I just want to go back to ministry and marriage for just a minute here. I wanted to add that when Bill is invited to do something in church or outside of the church, or I am invited to do something in our church or outside of the church, we confer with each other. And to me, his response and our discussion and what we come up with together is God's leading on whether I should do it or not. And too often I see within our Christian brothers and sisters, the church comes first and the ministry comes first. And the spouse is made to understand that this is what God is leading me to do, so you will just have to follow with me. And that is so sad, and it is so destructive to the union that God created of this husband and wife, and it's destroying it. And I'm sorry to say I see it more often than not. And I think we've gotten the cart before the horse here, that what's most important to God is your relationship with your spouse. And then two of you decide where God wants to use you in ministry. And it will be glorified because you have the support of your husband or your wife. And it feels just so good. I remember I was asked to do a big convention here in town and be the chair of it. And I was already doing 15 things in my church, right? So I thought, I'll ask Bill, and that will be my out. You know, he'll say, no, you can't do that. You're doing too much. So we were making the bed together, and I remember presenting it to him and saying, you know, I was invited to do this. What do you think? I got so much else going on in the church. And he said, oh, I think you can handle it. I think you do a great job. And I looked, and he said, you're kidding. Really? So I accepted, but I accepted with the criteria that he would come with me and we would kind of do it together. And it was fantastic. All went well, but we had support of each other in that decision.
I want to take a couple of questions here. This is anonymous listener says, my husband has been in addiction for 30 years. He can't see this as a problem. I feel alone in our marriage. Do you have any advice on how to approach this issue?
Huge problem. We get the calls and emails on that topic a lot. An addiction is a situation where something has captured you And we have a little rule that we call the policy of joint agreement. Never do anything without an enthusiastic agreement between you and your spouse. It is a bedrock essential rule for marriage. In other words, that what Joyce and I have agreed to do together is to never do anything without the other person's enthusiastic agreement. That's limiting. That's limiting. That means that there's a lot of things I can't do, a lot of things Joyce can't do, but we live in each other's comfort zones. We live in an area where both of us are happy with the way we're doing things. It eliminates the possibility of an addiction in our lives. By following that rule, there cannot be an addiction, because an addiction always comes between a husband and a wife.
So what does she do about this then, Bill?
Well, I think part of the problem is that I'd like him to somehow be educated in the whole process of thinking about her every time he makes a decision. And I always back the thing up and say, what kind of rules are you living by in your marriage? And I would imagine policy of joint agreement has never been followed that well. And so that's why he gets involved in addictions. But I will say this. I ran at one point in my lifetime 10 different chemical dependency treatment programs. I was in 10 different cities in Minnesota. And I got training in helping people with addictions. And I have to say that before you do any marriage counseling with a couple, you have to eliminate the addiction. And there are many procedures that she can follow. I would encourage her to get some help from Al-Anon. I would encourage her to get some help from her church. I would encourage her to read up on what is an addiction, how do you approach it. There are interventions that are possible to make this a problem that he understands, problem for her. In some cases, I have recommended separation until the addiction is over, because an addict really is not in a position to follow the policy of joint agreement. It's almost like Satan has snared the person. And in order to get the person out of the addiction, they have to separate themselves from the source of that addiction.
She mentioned she feels alone. Yeah. Don't go it alone.
Right.
Get support. Be open with people and tell them what you're going through prayer and coming alongside of you and somebody you can call for encouragement during difficult days. But he has to get help for his addiction.
We talk a lot about exposure as being something that not only draws attention to the problems that he's been having, but also provides support for her as the victim of the addiction itself.
Let's take a quick break and come back with some more questions and more insight and advice from Dr. Bill Harley. Bill and Joyce in studio today. You can find more on their website, marriagebuilders.com. There's a number of resources available there, including you can look at some of the contracts and things you can look at, the policy of joint agreement. You could find out more about that there as well. Bill has written several best-selling books, including His Needs, Her Needs, Love Busters. We've got a couple of copies of those we're going to give away at the top of the hour. You can sign up for one at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. If you have a question, you can send that in as well. Give us a call or send something online at myfaithradio.com. Go to the Connecting Faith show page and use the email link there. You can be anonymous as well. More coming up in just a moment. That will last a lifetime. It's possible, and it's really God's design. So getting a little refresher today with Dr. Bill Harley. Willard F. Harley, Jr. is a nationally acclaimed clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, and best-selling author of a number of books, including His Needs, Her Needs, Love Busters, a number of others. Great resources available on their website, marriagebuilders.com. Bill and Joyce in studio today. And we've got a couple of questions that we'll kind of get through, and I've got an email I want to address. But a listener in Wisconsin says, my husband is an alcoholic, and it has brought verbal, physical, and emotional abuse into our marriage. What advice can you give?
Yeah, the advice that I gave the last person is essentially the same thing, and that is that the first thing you need to do is expose the problem to other people. I think a lot of people feel that the problems in their marriage should be kept secret, that it's disrespectful to expose a spouse's affair or a spouse's abuse of drugs or whatever. To be honest, it is the exposure is how to get the problem out on the open. It's kind of like what happens to mold in a closet when you close the door. It basically grows. What happens when you open the door and let the sun in? It kills the mold. And I think the truth to me is so big a deal in life. And the more people that know about what he's doing, the more likely it is that he will get the help he needs. Then there's the other issue of the support she needs in this tragedy in her life. And she needs people to understand what she's going through and the help that she needs. And in many cases, I have recommended a separation until these problems are solved.
Well, especially if there's
physical abuse.
She should just leave and then work on these things out of his presence, because anything to irritate him further could escalate his abuse.
Yeah, that's a good point. In other words, if you're going to expose the person's physical abuse, you have to be out of the house when you do that. Otherwise, the abuse may get to a point where your life is in danger.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Anonymous listener wants to know, as an older couple, do these principles still work?
Yes.
And I said no, but no, I guess, but no. I guess,
yes, old dogs can learn new tricks, right?
All right. And there is, I'll tell you something that comes up a lot.
We're in that category. That's why I can say that, right?
Yes, okay. Yeah. Something that comes up a lot is this whole business of retirement. And what people have noticed is that they got along pretty well as long as they were employed and away from each other most of the time.
When Bill retired, I was going to write a book, So Your Husband Has Retired,
right.
How to Cope with This. And we did. We had adjustment during that time.
Exactly, yeah.
But it wasn't catastrophic by any means, but it was a little bump
but
in the road
there. We were used to having a lot of fun, say 15 or 20 hours a week, and then we'd be gone and do what we do. Yeah. And now that we're we've never really retired, but we work together. See, we're in the same house together all day long. And in order to do that, you have to develop sensitivities to each other's concerns. And this is where, you know, older people are finding how can we live together now that we're retired, because we just have, there are just so many things about our life where we just are so different. And there again, yes, indeed, you can, in fact, come to enthusiastic agreements about lifestyle. And I've worked with a lot of couples that are retired where they have gotten into habits that were, when they were separated with their job or whatever, it worked out just fine. But now that they're together, it doesn't work out at all.
They were independent. Now they're becoming interdependent.
Can you give these things up and learn new things? And absolutely they can.
One of the emotional needs, which we probably won't have time to do, is the recreational companionship, which is a great conversation we should maybe have for another time. I want to get to this anonymous listener who asks, how does a person live out the keep no record of wrongs, as 1 Corinthians 13 talks about, and still be honest with a spouse who carried on an almost 2-year long distance relationship with another woman? Do you never speak of it? I understand there must be respect. But is there a place for being honest with how that has affected me? What does forgiveness look like?
Yeah, basically there is a procedure that I have discovered that helps people actually survive an affair. And when the affair is ended, and it should be ended, and extraordinary precautions are taken to make sure that this relationship has ended, there's never any contact again, and that no other affairs are going to be on the horizon because of the precautions you're taking, and you develop a transparent life where you are honest with each other, you make your decisions together, and you create romantic love by meeting each other's emotional needs and avoiding love busters. When that's been done, then you're not going to feel that the affair is something you just can't stop thinking about.
You're not prone to go to keep no record of keeping records of the wrong.
Right.
In other words, all this other has taken over. And in Bill's book, Surviving an Affair, which we would like to get to this emailer, he talks about trust in the last chapter. It's the last thing that comes after years, perhaps, of going this procedure.
So I would imagine what's happened here is that the affair has not led to that their procedures for dealing with the affair have not led to a romantic relationship. There is no extraordinary precautions, and none of that has taken place. So if none of that has happened, then of course you're going to be worrying about any affair coming up. You're going to be thinking about the old affair, and it's just going to be on your mind all the time. So I would say that the procedure to follow is in our book, Surviving an Affair. If you follow that procedure, you're not going to have trouble bringing up the past. Although we do tell people this, that once the affair has been discussed, never bring it up again. Never talk about it again. Basic rule that don't dwell on mistakes of the past. However, I will say that you're not even going to think about it if the recovery is done properly.
Good. Surviving an Affair, and a friend, we'll see if we can get a book sent to you so that that would encourage you, which would make a big difference, I think, for you. Valentine's Day coming up in a couple weeks. So one of the questions that I had, if your wife says she doesn't want flowers and candy, should we believe her?
And I say yes. Yes, absolutely.
Joyce doesn't want flowers and candy.
Yeah. No, I don't need the candy. And I like the way things are decorated in the house right now. And it's an honesty and openness. And everybody is different. And Bill and I exchanged cards. And the clue for getting a good card, if you cry when you read it or laugh heartily when you read it at the card place, then buy that one, okay? And we exchange cards, and then we discuss together what we want to be doing to celebrate our love.
You should know each other well enough to know what would really be appreciated for Valentine's Day. And I really do encourage people to do something for Valentine's Day. Don't let it go by without any expression of love for each other.
And it may not be on the actual day, but say, you know, something else has come up. Mm-hmm. So what day shall we celebrate this year, our entire year of love, on this one day?
And it should be something you're doing all year long, quite frankly.
Yes.
Right.
Every day is Valentine's Day, right?
Well, it should be. Right, which is, again, I think it just gets back to the fact that if we're intentional about this, and this does take intention, doesn't it? I mean, we can't simply just, entropy is going to take over if we're not paying attention.
Well, this is why I feel that people should consider their schedules every week. And the question is, where are you on my schedule? Where are you where I know we're going to be meeting each other's emotional needs? I recommend 15 hours of undivided attention. That has to be scheduled. And I recommend 3:30 Sunday afternoon. Look at your schedules. Where are we in each other's schedules for undivided attention?
Bill and I
hours.
Do that, even though we work together every day. We have to have a good time, fun together, too. We love what we do, granted. Yeah. But just the two of us, not discussing other people's problems.
Yeah. Get it on the schedule. Make a difference. Have a great year of building romantic love. Talking with Bill and Joyce Harley today. You can find out more about all the resources, a number of free resources available on their website, marriagebuilders.com, a number of articles. You can find out where to get the books as well, including 5 Steps to Romantic Love, Love Busters, His Needs, Her Needs, and more. Bill is a nationally acclaimed clinical psychologist, marriage counselor, and best-selling author. Joyce, great to have you along with as well. You guys do a daily radio call-in show called Marriage Builders, and that's, through marriagebuilders.com, right?
Right, exactly.
Right, check it out. Guys, thanks for coming again.
And see you next February,
Bill.
All
right, sure, we'll do it. Or before. All right. If you missed part of today's program, you can always check the interview online. We post them on the website at myfaithradio.com, and then go to the Connecting Faith show page.